Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home, you're going to say it as well. In friendships, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life, I've lived under the gaze of my parents. Fuck that shit.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Podcast. What's going on, Shan?
Wow. I actually have a bone to pick with you.
With me?
Yeah, so I was looking at one of our videos, from the recording, and I was like, there's white stuff on my mouth. I said, surely at one point, Liam would have seen there is white stuff on my mouth. I've never even had that before. I'm not someone who experiences that. I was clearly using the cheap lip gloss on the day. But I said, what, Liam couldn't stop the recording and tell me?
The joke is, it's so funny because there's a previous episode that I've also watched where I have white stuff on the corner of my mouth. And I'm
tag team, one for one.
But I think it's because my camera is, like, the quality of the production doesn't look as good until after we've done the edit. And so I can see you, but I can't see, like, the detail, yeah.
Can I look at it and said, wow, after I big up on the podcast, good friend, close friend, so lucky like no other, and there's white spit or something on my mouth. I said, what the world?
And that's the funny thing, right? We always cuss our girlfriends. Like, one thing that I consistently say to my girlfriends is, like, thank God I have good friends that don't let me look like a damn fool in public as it relates to my outfit or my makeup or anything like that. So it's actually really funny that you said that. I'm sorry, boo. I wish I had seen it. I would have told you.
Also, Cam, I'm sorry about, because clearly I done it too. But another thing with a bone to pick, yeah, this is actually at myself. And I wonder if you can relate to this with, like, when you was dating before. But I saw this Instagram post today, and it was like, it was a guy taking the piss out of girls. So the guy was like, oh, he hasn't texted me, but it's okay because he's probably going through something. He's probably having a hard time in his life. And I looked in the comments, and I was in stitches, yeah, because there was all these women, like, doing their version of what it is, like, oh, you know, this time of year he gets really stressed, or oh, he's changing jobs, or oh, he's this. And when you're not in that situation at the time, it's easy to look at it from a rational perspective and be like, this person just doesn't care. They actually just don't want to put the energy in. Like,
yeah,
what they're showing you is what they feel about you, sort of thing. But I am definitely queen of giving men these ridiculous excuses that they didn't ask for. So I wanted to ask you, have you ever done that? Like, can you relate to that?
No, I'm like the queen of pessimism. So when somebody doesn't message me back, particularly a man, or like, you know, they flake on me or they make up some dumb excuse, I always think the worst. I'm always like, oh, he doesn't want me anymore. He doesn't like me. So let me just keep it pushing. And until they come back and say otherwise explicitly, that's the assumption that I'm running with.
Right. Whereas I'm romanticizing everything. The issue can't be me.
No.
Did I ever tell you about the guy that I thought was, that all my friends told me had ghosted me, but he was on the run?
No.
Okay, so I was talking to this guy, yeah, that I had met abroad. Lovely guy. We was getting along so well, talking nonstop every day, blah, blah, blah. I was living in Birmingham at the time. We had a routine of I'd come down every 2 weeks, see him. Mm-hmm. I was loving it, my Ghanaian prince. And then out of nowhere, he just disappeared. I couldn't get through to him, couldn't hear from him. And all my friends are like, Vishan, he's ghosted you. And I was like, no, he hadn't. I'm like, I know the connection that we was building. I know how intentional he was with me. Like, he has not ghosted me. Months passed. I'm stressing about this guy, calling the guy. I've called the police at this point.
Yeah.
And I've asked the police. I can't remember what it's called, but you can issue like a certain, not warrant, but you can issue a certain thing if you think someone's a missing person. And then the police will go to the house, and if the house confirms that there's an issue, they'll come back to you. But if there isn't an issue, the police won't say nothing to you at all.
Oh my God, Shan, did the police go to his house?
I think so, but they didn't come back to me. It's only now I've actually remembered they didn't come back to me, because I was so like, this has nothing to do with me. So that happened. And then I called his workplace, and I'm like, hi, has he been coming to work? What is going on? Is he okay? They're like, we can't disclose information. At the time, GDPR wasn't as big as it was now, but essentially that's what it was. Then I went to his house. Yeah. Went to his house. I parked up outside like this. And I was like, I'm going to find out the information. I'm a journalist. I'm a trained journalist. I'm going to find out the information. So I waited outside his house. And I think I was with my friend and she checked like his letterbox to see if there had been like letters coming through. Because if someone's not staying there, it would be packed up, but you couldn't really see it. Then someone came, because he lived in flats, someone came out of the block. So we went up to his door, knocked on the door. He didn't answer. So then we thought, okay, cool, let's call it a day. So I left it, went home. But my spirit didn't rest. At this point, it might have been like 8 months, you know. And I'm genuinely worried the whole time about this guy. I told my mum, I'm like, mum, this boy is a missing person. He hasn't been tweeting, he hasn't been on social media, like he's gone. So then I went back to his house again and I met his neighbour. And his neighbour started telling me, can I say this? Well, yeah, because no one's gonna know who it is. His neighbour started telling me how he hasn't been here for months. He's maybe been here twice in the last, how many, like 8 months. And that there was an occasion where someone knocked on her door for him and she didn't answer. And then when she looked outside, there was like loads of boys on bikes all around the back and front of the house, like all blacked out, ready to do something. And this guy, by the way, that I was talking to was not a guy that was gang affiliated in any way. He just wasn't this. So when the neighbor's telling me this, I'm like, you're giving me intel, but the math isn't mathing, because this isn't the guy that I was dating. And then she was like, did she take my number? Yeah, she took my number. I've got her number on my phone till this day. She was like, take my number if I see anything. She was like, I'm not going to tell you like any particular information.
Right.
But if I hear from him, I'll let you know and I can return the information. And then she gave me a piece of card and I wrote on the card a message to him. Let's call him Charlie. I was like, hi, Charlie. If you're ghosting me, it's absolutely fine. Just confirm, because I'm very worried. I haven't heard from you in 8 months. I just want to make sure you're good. Here's my number in case you lost it. Posted it underneath. Fast forward now, 3 months, I get a call from Charlie. I'm like, oh my God. It wasn't on his number either. And it was at like 2 a.m. And he's like, Shan, I've got your letter. I'm so sorry. There's been so much happening and going on that I can't physically tell you right now, but one day it will make sense. And I'm like, okay, cool, but where are you? And I think at this time he was in like, I don't think he was even in the country, or he was just somewhere far, like not from London. And he's like, don't worry, I'll explain it to you. And then he basically like, got to go, the end. And then he called again, maybe another time. And then he was like, you can come and see me, but you have to come right now.
No.
And then I came right now. We had a great night. And then he explained to me everything, and I was like, okay, cool. And he was like, I'm going to come back in a few months' time, and then everything will be done and settled properly. And when he explained it, not to go into his big business on the pod, but essentially he was someone that was living with him temporarily got into a situation that he wasn't resolving, and because they were living at his house,
yeah,
he then took on the responsibility to resolve it, because obviously he lived with his mom, and he was like, my mom's not getting into any issues because of this other person. And then I thought I had this person back, and it was, you know, got my man back, my love story, proved everyone wrong, like, da 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 da. And then he ended up being a dickhead.
Oh, no. So he didn't ghost you, but he was an asshole.
In the end, yeah. Like, we didn't even, like, after that situation, we didn't actually ever start talking again, like, properly.
Yeah.
I swear I told you this story before. The guy who asked me if I was on the pill.
I have never heard this story.
No, not that. The story about the guy who asked me if I was on the pill. Because I had put on weight.
Oh, yes. You did tell me that story. This is the same guy?
Same guy. And that's the reason why we stopped talking. After that day, I was like, I don't know what character you're displaying, but it's not a character I'm going to engage with. But yeah, see, sometimes the delusion is real, because I knew in my heart he didn't ghost me.
I mean, I definitely feel like you have to trust your intuition, but also you must have been really into him to not chase but to make sure he was okay.
See me, I'm very blunt, I'm very direct. He was also like that, so I had no reason to believe that he would be ghosting, because he's someone who would just be like, I don't chat to you no more, the end.
Yeah.
And he knows that my character isn't a character to have been being like, oh, no, please stay. Like, there was a really clear understanding. So when I can't hear from him, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this guy's planning future things. We're talking about this. We're talking about that. What's the math isn't my thing? But, yeah, I definitely, outside of that situation, made up stories that didn't agree. Oh, they're grieving. So that's why. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's not go into that.
That's hilarious. Okay. That is a crazy story that I've never heard before, but it is one for the books for sure.
But enough about that story. Hit me with your fun fact for this week.
Okay, so fun fact for this week, which is actually a very interesting one. I decided to go more kind of not historical, but current with our fun fact. I felt like, you know, we needed a little bit of positive information about Black women. And so I read a statistic recently, which I actually didn't know, so this is a learning moment for both of us, that Black women in the United States, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the percentage of Black women with a bachelor's degree or higher has been consistently increasing over the years. And more specifically, 27.4% of Black women in the United States aged 25 and older have obtained a bachelor's degree or higher. And actually, that statistic is higher than any other minority group in the US.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Shout out us Black women. Shout us out.
Yes. And imagine many of these Black women are probably doing this while holding down jobs. There are probably some of are single mothers, some of them are parenting, whether co-parenting or by themselves. Some of them are, you know, doing, I mean, how many women, Black women, do you know, even in the group that we have, that are only doing one thing with their lives, you know? So that was quite impressive to me.
Yeah, especially that we're the highest. I wonder what it would be in the UK. I'd have to look at that after, actually.
So I tried to look that up, actually, but unfortunately it's not as high, but I think it also brought to mind an interesting comparison between the US and the UK, and just like historically how far behind we are as a community in the UK because of the fact that we're just not as far along in that journey. So one, there's less of us, right? There's way less women. And in many instances, we are still being iced out of those spaces, whether it's academia, whether it's education, whether it's jobs. So like the percentage of women in Black women in STEM is incredibly low, which is why you have amazing groups like Coding Black Females. When we're talking about women who have obtained PhD, I think I don't know if this is a an up-to-date statistic, but at some point in time, there are only 25 black women professors in the UK. And that was as a result of even women who had gotten their PhD were not being like, they weren't able to break through the ceiling of entering into like formal academia. So yeah, it's very sad.
That is very, very sad actually. I've always thought about getting a PhD. Did I tell you before I wanted to go back to uni to study psychology?
No, yes, you did. You did.
Yeah, but I think I've parked that bridge now. I can't bother to be going back and submitting dissertations, typey-typey research. Yeah, I've had enough.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would teach at some point in time, and I feel like you'd be a good teacher as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm done with learning in formal institutions.
On the note of being done with, okay, do you know what I've completely been done with? This isn't about men this time. This isn't about men. Do you remember a few years ago, I think I did a podcast on it, but I spoke to you about like the idea of being scared to have children or like scared to become a mum.
For sure.
And it was a really, really big fear of mine. And I spent a lot of time listening to like parenting podcasts, reading parenting books, and also just like G-checking myself and talking to myself and understanding what it is this fear comes from. But I'm definitely not in that season anymore. I'm very much ready to, you know, meet a lovely Prince Charming, have a baby, grow a family. And I feel like a lot of that came from unlearning ideologies and things that I had told myself that actually didn't even exist. So I just wanted to ask you, like, when it comes to the idea of, like, having a baby, I feel like that is something you want to do, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to be a parent. And it's interesting that I was going to ask you what those kind of barriers were for you, because I always say that I want to be a parent, but when it comes down to it and I actually have to think about like being responsible for an individual from the age of 0 through to like, well, you never stop being responsible for your kids, but let's say the age of like 18 or even 22, that scares the shit out of me. So,
And I guess for some people that number is highly dependent on whether or not they are very independent.
Yeah. And I think also it's tricky because I think for us, as Black women, Black men, you know, there's a lot of history around Black families and how they negotiate things. And I think about the way in which my dad raised me and thinking about all of the things that I would never want to do to repeat his approach, but then also things that, even though I hated it at the time, would definitely try to replicate in my own parents. Yeah. But so much of it is healing from our own parental trauma, right? Like I know I have attachment, specific types of attachment issues. I think I'm like anxious attachment.
I literally just watched a Stephen Bartlett interview today, which was with this lady. I think it's called something like why you got to get rid of the ex or you're going to be single forever. And she spoke about the attachment types. And I'm definitely anxious. Anxious attached. Yeah. I need to unlearn that though as soon as possible.
And I'm sure that applies to parenting as well, right? Like my mom and dad were extremely, extremely conservative, partially because they were older. But like I didn't pierce my ears until I was 18. I wasn't allowed to sleep over at people's houses. I remember the most embarrassing story. I think I went to a Sweet 16 and my dad had this thing about me not being out after midnight. Like my curfew was like 11 or something. And my mom typically would try to like extend it a little bit or whatever it is. But I remember one time I was at this birthday party and I guess I had lost track of time and my mom and sister were outside waiting on me. And she must have asked somebody to get Leanne. And the person went to the DJ and was like, Leanne, leave us. Your mother is at the gate. And everybody just like looked at me and I literally melted into the floor. I was so pissed. But that's kind of, you know, that is very reflective of the type of upbringing that I had. Went to church every Sunday. Like I had a very, very conservative upbringing. And so,
but also I think in that environment or in that situation, as a child, you can feel very like isolated in terms of like you're not seeing other parents doing that to their child. But also as an adult, you can look at it and be like, it's a genuine reflection that your mom actually cared. Because I have a friend and I remember her mom, I feel like this is a step worse than what you experienced, yeah, not to do like trauma Olympics, but her mom walked into the party and looked around every room and was basically investigating like Inspector Gadget to see if she was going to let her child stay there. And then when she picked her up, she did the same thing. And at the time, it can feel like, oh my gosh, this person's mom's doing so much. But I always internalize it as, nah, I fuck with it. Like, this, she cares about her child. Because there were some parents or some people that I went to school with, and their parents didn't come to parents' evening. Their parents didn't come to sports days. Their parents didn't care. They would go to every single party, no matter what type of parent it was of the host of the child. And they wouldn't even know how they're getting home. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, and it's funny that you told that story, because I have another girlfriend who has that exact same story. So clearly there's a trend going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of it is not so much that I resented the approach or the rules themselves, but the approach to the rules. So there's this like, obviously, and I don't know if this, I feel like your mom was quite hip and cool in terms of how she approached parenting you. And your siblings, but in my house, it was very much like, don't speak until you're spoken to. I don't need to know why, you just need to know that this is the rule. And I think when I think about parenting my own child, I think about them needing to understand why I'm being strict or why I'm saying no. Because it helps them to understand, and like, it creates buy-in to actually, mommy's right, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think for me, my mum, there was definitely a balance. I wouldn't say my mum was the strictest mum, but she was definitely more on the verge of strict than not strict. But I think, as you said, her approach to it was very different. So my mum didn't ever tell me, like, you shouldn't smoke or you shouldn't drink. Because in her head, she's taught me right from wrong, and I just know not to do that. And that's why I've never, ever, ever smoked since then. Do you know what I mean? And then when it comes to the point you made about, like, speaking, I feel like my mum was really open and honest with me about a lot of things from very, very young. So I probably didn't really have that experience in the same way. But I think as someone who didn't have that experience, I'm probably on the extreme other end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's a detriment to that. I feel like there's certain things that as children we shouldn't be exposed to or shouldn't be aware of, mm-hmm. because we should be allowed to actually be kids. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? And I don't think I had those experiences to my detriment at all. And I think a lot of the reasons why people will meet me and talk to me and be like, oh, you seem older than you are, blah, 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 is because of that sort of advanced conversations from a young age. But I can still see how for somebody else that may have manifested in a negative way.
Yeah, I think a perfect example of that for me is my parents obviously separated when I was, I want to say like 14, 15, or that's when their separations kind of mm-hmm. started. And there was so much, I mean, I think we recognize now as adults that our parents are flawed and they're just human beings and, you know, they can't help themselves in some instances. They're not impervious to making mistakes. But my mom, I would say, was very vocal about how she felt about my dad and his behavior, and very much was willing to shit all over him. And my dad never said anything about my mom. Like, ever. Yeah. He never involved us. He felt like it wasn't our place. And in reflection, I definitely agree with him, because what it ultimately forced us to do as kids was to take sides. And for a long time,
you start viewing him as his role as a husband and not his role as a dad.
Exactly, exactly.
My relationship with my dad now is cool, but when I was younger, it was quite problematic. No, I don't even mean problematic on a conscious level. I just mean like things that you'd only find problematic if you are the co-parent, that you wouldn't find problematic as a child.
Yeah,
my mom never made me privy to that stuff. She never spoke bad about my dad ever growing up. She always, even when he was a bit shitty towards her, she always wanted us to be close. Like, she's always championed that. But I think part of that was for her. She was like, when you get older, you'll see and you'll understand. So it's not for me to now taint your image of your dad when you're 14 or 15 and you don't really understand certain things. And then my dad, he didn't really say bad things about my mom. Ever, to be honest. He would more, what he used to do, which was a bit toxic and a bit frustrating, is that things that I did towards him that reminded him of my mum, he would make that very known. And it was never in an empowering way. It was always in a negative way. Like, oh, your attitude stinks just like your mum. Mm. It's like, huh? What are you talking about?
It seems like a flippant statement, right? Like, he probably just said it, like, just off the top of his head. It wasn't intentionally malicious towards your mum. But you don't know the level of impact that that could have had on someone, dependent on who the child.
And we literally spoke about it the other day. Like, literally, we had a conversation because he brought it. He was talking about another mother and another father and daughter pair that we both know. And he was like, oh, I kind of see similarities with them that I saw to us. How can we help them? He was like, can you maybe talk to the girl, the daughter in the situation, ask her if she'd get therapy with him? And she was saying all these things. I was thinking, my dad has suggested this. Like, wow. And I said to him, like, oh, and he made a comment of saying, you know, for the dad's perspective, I can see that it's frustrating because she's always siding with her mom, and she also shows up a lot of traits like the mom. And I said, it's interesting you say this because you used to always say to me that I'm doing things that remind you of my mom. And actually, that's really toxic. If I have been raised by this person, of course I'm going to have similar traits to them.
Yeah, true.
That's it. And actually, when you decided to date this person, you once admired and loved those traits. So don't now use it as a reason to be combative. Also, in that situation, yes, that might be the reminder, but that's not actually the issue. Let's talk about the issue here that they have between the two people, rather than adding something that's making you feel like you've got more fuel to the fire. Do you get what I mean? And when we spoke about it, he was like, you know what? I hear you, you're right. It's actually not relevant. And I was like, wow, look at this.
Fatherhood. You know what's interesting is, and I know you've talked about like the interesting relationship that you've had with your dad over the years, but I think there's this ongoing stereotype about Black dads that they're absent and they're not present in their children's lives. And I feel like we need to dispel this stereotype because I know so many amazing dads and they all parent differently. And I'm not saying that they're perfect because nobody is.
Yeah.
But they are present and they want to be in their parent, in their child's lives.
I definitely agree with that. And I think also to kind of caveat that point a little bit is that sometimes having an absent dad isn't a bad thing because sometimes people have present dads who aren't actually present. So you have a dad that lives in your household and might give your mum money, but doesn't come to parents' evening, doesn't know your favourite colour or your shoe size, doesn't spend quality time with you guys, is always in his room on Christmas Day, is always working. What is that? What's worse? They're basically both the same thing. Do you get what I mean? But I do think you're right. I think we should dispel those myths because I think part of my fears when we started this conversation and I was talking about why I didn't want to have kids is that I was like, if I'm being honest, it was actually less to do with my relationship with my dad and more to do with the idea that Black fathers are absent. I was like, I don't want to run that risk with the child that I end up making. And then when I started to look around me at the echo chamber I have of men, they're amazing dads. I've got a cousin who is a single dad of five. Wow. Of five. And works.
Are they all your kids?
No, so he was with a woman who was, I would call my cousin as well. And then they had kids. She already had children.
Okay.
They split up. She had one child of somebody else. And then she sadly passed away. And he took on the responsibility of all of the kids. So her kids before him, with him, and the one after.
And that's why I was asking the question, because I actually know also a lot of dads who are parenting kids that aren't theirs. It says here, contrary to popular belief, 42% of Black children live with two parents and 51% live with one. And in many of those instances, those are Black dads. So we see that over 15% of single fathers are actually Black dads. So they're clearly doing the work, like dads are around, they're present, whether single or in relationships. And it's a very disgusting, nasty stereotype that I think has been perpetuated about Black men. And, you know, I'm sure that women have stories about some Black dads being absent, but it's definitely not the majority.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? One, I'm not a parent. But also, I think there's always going to be someone who can go against the grain of the rule of what we're talking about. Because what I was going to say is as well, and this isn't even to be like, no, Black dads. But sometimes The absent black dads have been pushed away from toxic moms. And I've seen it. The mom weaponizes the child against them. It has a toll on the man's mental health, which affects his work, which affects his finances, his stability in his own life as an individual. And he has to say, it's better for me to step away from trying to be a dad, to focus on my mental health and sort my life out and not be with this toxic person, and then wait till the child gets older to then try and be a dad. And that's not for me agreeing with it. I actually don't think if I was a dad in that situation, that's what I would think would be the best route. But I completely understand why dads take that route on occasions, on situations where the mum is being very toxic. Like, there was a video, I'm not sure if you saw it, but I'll put it in the link of the description after. And it was in America, and there was a woman, and she was filming this her child's father. And she's like, oh, I've got a restraining order on him, and he's come to my child's birthday party. And she's like popping off, and she calls the police. So when I watched it, I was like, I feel so sorry for her. He's violating her privacy. He's breaking the law. She's probably very intimidated by him, probably very scared. Yeah. And my friend, who was a guy, had actually sent me this video, and he was like, Rashan, she's a witch. She's a liar. I know she's lying because women lie all the time. And me and him ended up going back and forth because he was like, why are you assuming the woman's right? And I'm not assuming she's right. I'm saying there's two sides to every story. We don't know either of the stories, but I understand why the woman may react in that way.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it from a rational perspective. I don't know mad women that just make up lies. Anyway, the next day, there was a follow-up video. Oh, God. And in the follow-up video, the father of the child is talking to the police officer. And he's like, I was here first for my other child's birthday. She knew I was here. So she has turned up and then made out that I was violating the rules of the restraining order. But he was like, if you check the CCTV, I've been here for 3 hours and she just turned
crazy,
up.
Crazy, crazy. I mean, and obviously it's not here to bash women or bash men.
Not at all, because there's also men that actually just have kids and they'll be like, I didn't want to have kids, fuck you. But it's like, why didn't you wear a condom then?
Exactly. I have a friend, very good friend. He had a kid with this woman. He was dating her, but they weren't really together. But he was like, you know what? I'm going to man up. I'm going to be a dad. He moved the mom and the child into his house. Was, you know, I don't know if he was responsible for them, but they were all trying to live together and co-parent. The mom decided that she wanted to move to Antigua, interestingly enough. I think she's there, actually.
Not my country.
And he was like, no, you can't take my kid. Like, if this is the case, we have to go to court because you're not just going to up and move to another country without us having a discussion about it first. And she was like, it's not your child. And they went to court that it wasn't his child. But by this time, the child is like almost 4 years old. And so because of the fact that it wasn't his child, the courts granted her custody. She took the child to Antigua. And my friend, let's call him Adam, has never seen his daughter. Let's call her Amy ever again. And it broke him.
Did he know when he moved them in that wasn't his biological child?
No.
Wow, that is crazy. And it broke him.
You know what I mean? For a good couple of years, I think he left Jamaica. He moved to the UK. He, was depressed for a long time, probably engaged in activities that he shouldn't have in order to, you know, heal or whatever it is, or try to heal. He's moved on and he has a family now. But, I mean, that... as far as he's concerned, even after he found out that the kid wasn't his, he was like, it's my kid. This is my daughter. I've raised her. And so it's, there are lots of good men out there. Shout out to all the good black dads.
Yeah.
Actually, very random question. Did your mom ever beat you when you were a kid?
Yeah, but she's in denial about it. The other day, I said to her, do you remember when you hit me with the pot on my head? And she was like, I didn't do that. And I'm like, you did. And she was like, I didn't. And I said, okay, we can all plead the fifth. I feel like she just feels like she didn't do that. And I'm like, she did do it. I wouldn't say I'm not going to lie. She did beat me when I was growing up, but not to the extent that, like, someone else listening who was beaten may be able to relate to.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Like, obviously, I've used the example of the pot, but that was probably, like, a one-off in my whole thing. And I don't think she ever... I was going to say beat me in a way that is to my detriment. And I actually don't even believe in beating kids, if I'm being completely honest. But I just don't think... I feel like I've spoken to people, my dad being one of them, and I know his dad beat him, as in beat him to a point where it's concerning. My experience with my mum wasn't like that. It was like, she's hit me, she slapped me. It wasn't like she's letting out her... I feel like some parents, I might say, okay, my issue with... I know you didn't ask me my issue, but... My issue with beating children is that sometimes I feel like it's a reflection of the loss of anger and control of the individual that is dishing out the beating. So what I'm saying is, I felt like my mum, when she did beat me, it was more of a form of discipline than a form of trying to lash out on anger. But yes, I did get beat.
Yeah, same. I was going to ask you what your opinion was on beating your kids anyway. So thank you for answering that question.
So what's yours on that?
So I think my mom hit me, or like, let me say, gave me like a proper beating once in my entire life. I think she like slapped me once across my face when I had done something fairly bad. And the beating was actually because I almost burnt the house down. So I feel like in some way that...
Yeah, you should have got this. Understand.
But I don't believe in hitting kids on the principle that it teaches them that that's a behavior that's acceptable in response to something that is not, that's negative or that should be chastised or condemned. Like, I think there are better ways of communicating, especially to young kids. I guess it's harder with young kids because they can't communicate. But once you get to an age where you have a child that you can communicate and explain things to them, I think that's always the better way, because hitting is then becomes a learned behavior.
I think a lot of parents, especially Caribbean parents, they have this thing that if you beat the kid, they'll respect you. No, they'll actually lose respect. They lose it. It's the opposite. They don't respect you. They lose the respect. My youngest two siblings, who are biologically not my kids, but my kids, they have a lot of respect for me. Whenever we go to family functions, whenever we go out, people always say, wow, they really listen to their big sister, or wow, they really respect their big sister. And I don't beat them. And they do get in trouble. When they come to my house and I say you're on timeout, they know what that means. And then it's not, how long am I on timeout for? Just sit down. And I'll tell you when the alarm goes. They know the alarm's going to go on, and when it goes off, that's when they're free to go. I feel like people need to find the coping mechanism.
That's a quite torturous timeout. To not even know how long you have on your timeout. You just have to sit there. And
no, I will tell them, but I'm saying they know not to ask me. It's not for you to ask me. It's for me to tell you. Sometimes the timeout might be that they need to just calm down. They're not actually in trouble. So I might say to my brother, come in, have 2 minutes to just breathe. Focus on your breathing for 2 minutes. The alarm will go off. If they're in actual trouble, then this timeout for maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. We're going to reset this whole place because you lot are mashing up my things.
And the thing is, like, my dad never actually hit me, but he was the disciplinarian in our family. Like, if he looked at us the wrong way, I would be in tears, devastated that I disappointed him. And I think, that's ultimately, I don't know that you want that level of extreme emotional beating, because it was an emotional beating in many instances.
But then I guess it depends on the child, isn't it? Because when you were saying that, I was thinking, oh, I like that idea. Like, you're not doing that, you're not doing that. But then you're saying it's still on an emotional level. But then I guess for another child, that might have been fine. Or maybe if you was a boy and not a girl, that would have been fine. Because your brother's the oldest.
No, he's the middle child. And I think middle children always have issues. But it's true.
That is so irrelevant to the topic.
Another topic altogether. But I think with my dad, it was extreme. Obviously, you don't want to disappoint your parents, but with that anxious attachment that I think I know I have, and my sister definitely has it, I think all three of us were so on edge, like consistently walking on eggshells about not disappointing. And it's part of the reason I show up in the way that I show up at work. It's part of the reason that I show up in the way that I show up in my friendships, in my relationships. To my detriment in many instances, because oftentimes when you work so hard to please your other people, you don't end up pleasing yourself. And I agree, like, every child is different, but I think extremes are never good for anybody.
For example, have you ever looked after your goddaughter and then had to tell her
off? For sure. I've definitely had to discipline her. It's so funny. I remember when she was like she was probably a year and a half, maybe. She'd just started talking. And she was doing something. And I didn't hit her. Although her mother would have been fine with that, ostensibly. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if that's true or not. Let me take that back. Let me start over. I remember when she was probably like a year and a half, my goddaughter. And I was, you know, she was with me. And I got really upset at something she was doing. And I didn't hit her. But I like slammed my hand down on the couch. So the noise was what, you know, let her know that I was upset. And she immediately started crying. And I felt so guilty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I hugged her. I was like, I'm so sorry, auntie, sorry. And so the way in which I discipline her now is like, I'll take things away or mm-hmm. I'll tell her that she's not getting something or, you know, there's a negotiation there, I suppose. But and she does ask questions, like you don't have to explain to her because she'll ask why. And so we try to talk through those things. But yeah, I'm afraid to hit anybody else's child, so I don't know. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned just then saying sorry, yeah? Is that something you heard a lot growing up?
No,
from a parent?
Definitely not. And I don't know that many, I don't think I've ever heard my dad or my mom apologize to me as it relates to being too harsh or being excessive in their reaction to something that I've done. I mean, my dad mm-hmm. also was not very emotional, so he would never say I'm sorry, and he wasn't big on saying I love you until he got much older. But yeah, I think mm-hmm. parents feel entitled to not say sorry, like what it is.
The other day I was with my brother, yeah, and I was very, very frustrated. I had him and my sister, I think, for two nights or for one night. But I had plans the next day to go to my dad's for dinner. And it's long to get into now on the pod, but it was quite important, okay, that dinner. It was quite significant. It wasn't just me going. I was trying to sort something out, basically. And I had an agreed time with my mum for the time the kids need to be collected. The time came and gone, had come and gone. I spoke to my stepdad, who was meant to be getting them. And he's like, your mum didn't tell me to come for this time.
Okay.
Now, I can see my mum's house on my phone because I have her camera on my phone. So as I'm watching the camera, I can see my stepdad walk out, have a fag, come back. I'm watching my mum roll up to the house, like to her house at the time. She should have been at mine. I was highly frustrated. So in the end, I said to my siblings, we're going to go to my dad's.
Okay.
And your parents will meet us there. Which is fine because they all know each other, like everyone's cool. But this wasn't a normal day I'm going to my dad's. If it was a normal day of me going to my dad's, I wouldn't have cared. So because I'm trying to sort out all these things and make sure everything's perfect, I'm really like frustrated, highly emotional with these things. Anyway, we get on the train and as we're walking, my brother does something and I shout like, what's wrong with you, man? Just annoying me. Oh. And then I got on the train. My brother didn't react either. And I got on the train. And him not reacting showed me that his level of self-awareness and understanding of me has risen completely. Because he actually didn't react because he knew this wasn't about him. This was about me being frustrated at his mum.
Yeah.
Before we got to my dad, which isn't that far from me, I said to him, I said, Kai, just want to let you know how I acted on that train. I mean, how I acted when I was walking to the train station wasn't a reflection of you. I was just frustrated at mum. And I should never have shouted at you. So I'm really sorry. And he said, it's okay. And I said, I know it's not okay. I can see you're still upset. And that's fine. But I'm genuinely so sorry. I should never have done that. And no adult should shout at you because they're frustrated at somebody else. Or even if they're frustrated at you. And he was like, thanks, Shan. And I just thought, like, those things are so important because I don't know how he might have internalised that moment.
Yeah.
And I also was in the wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say you're sorry. Like, you don't want to be that, like, ruling with an iron fist, right? You want to be able to have you... And I don't agree that parents should be their kids' friends, but I do think that parents should be a safe space for their kids. I remember when I was maybe in fourth grade, and I went to a Jewish prep school, which was predominantly expats and like white kids or very light skinned kids. I was one of the darkest kids at the school, one of like three. And I remember getting teased relentlessly about my skin color. Like they used to call me names. They would write on my uniform. Like it was not a pleasant experience. And And maybe years later, I was talking to my parents and it came up and they were like, why didn't you tell us? And I was like, well, to be honest, I didn't think you would do anything about it because, you know, the adults are always right. And you're the adults. The teachers are the adults. And everybody at school knew what was going on and nobody kind of brought it to my attention. Like, I just didn't think you would care. And they were really upset about it. And I was like, well, you know, when you create the safe space where I don't feel like I'm going to get blamed for something that happened to me, then I can come and talk to you about it. But when I was younger, I think throughout my life, I don't think that that's ever been the case for my relationship with my parents. And so moving forward, it's something that I'm very conscious of.
So how do you think you strike the balance then, either for yourself with your parents, if you were to go back in the time, or for you as a parent with your own child, of maybe not being friends, but creating that safe space? Because I would say I'm like friends with my mom, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something online a month ago, and it was around the same conversation, like parents shouldn't be friends with their kids. And I was just like, I couldn't really understand people's reasons for being against it. But obviously, I'm on the opposite side, and I see the benefits of it. So I'm going to naturally have a bias, and I have a bias. But so my question to you is two things. The first one is, what do you think is the negative to that setup? And then the second thing is, how do you strike the balance of having a child and creating a safe space for them to come to you, but not being on the same level as friends?
I think the detractor for me in terms of being your kid's friend is the lack of boundaries and respect that I've seen come out of those types of relationships at times. And it's interesting because I feel like I know Imam and I know you, but I know less about, I've never seen you interact with each other, right? Like, I've seen you interact as friends, like as people who enjoy each other's company. And but it obviously wasn't around for your childhood. But some of the parents or some of the kids my own age or younger and sometimes older, and the way they talk to their parents is wild, like super wild. And the parents almost get into a back and forth with them about it. And I'm like, I think there's a balance to be had, because on one end, like, I couldn't even say yeah to my mom. Like, I had to say yes, mom, or... but, you know, there was no cursing around her or anything like that, or cursing around either of my parents. And we never went out together, although I wish that had happened at some point in time. But yeah, I think it breeds a lack of or breeds a sense of familiarity where you lose the boundaries between parent and child. And there's a lack of respect there that can turn into something that becomes unsafe for the child, because they might, you know, mouth off to anybody, and not everybody will take that kind of talk or that kind of chat.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because I definitely remember being younger and talking to my mom in a certain way, and then one day seeing my friends do it to their mom and being like, ew, like, why do you talk to your mom like that? Like, as in the same way that I spoke to my mom. And I remember talking to myself and thinking, I don't know if I can be friends with this person anymore because of how they talk to their mum. And I had a light bulb moment where I was like, that's how I talk to mine. And then from then I made a conscious effort to show more respect to her when I was talking to her. But I wouldn't have linked that time to me being friends with my mum. That was definitely a very clear-cut parent and daughter relationship. It was more to do with respect. And actually, as I'm talking to you now and I unpack the similarities in the relationship between me and my mum at the time, and my friend and her mum at the time, it goes back to what I said earlier on in this call about parents who have conversations with their children that are adult-like and not child-like. And so because of that, it then makes you as a child feel like you are on par with your mum to then talk to them in a certain way. And I feel like that's where the issue comes, as opposed to it being like, oh, it's friends. It's actually the comfortability in the conversations that you're having.
Agreed.
Do you get what I mean?
It's the types of conversations.
But I definitely, that was one of the comments I saw on the post the other day. And I actually thought, like, that was me for a part. That was me.
I think the way I intend to strike the balance is by what you actually just said. So keeping the child conversations to the conversation with the child and not inserting the child into my adult life and adult things. And I think that compartmentalization goes into not taking your frustration out on your child. It goes into creating boundaries, but keeping safe spaces. One of the things that Barry and I have talked about, which we failed as it relates to our dearest, my dearest stepson, is not arguing in front of the kids. And our stepson, my stepson, is older, so he's an adult, like it doesn't matter as much. But I definitely think that not having those adult moments in front of kids is really important. And again, going back to the idea of having conversations that are open and honest and transparent, but still in a way that's very respectful and formal is the wrong word, but just like, you know, those little things, like I call everybody who's older than me auntie, and I'm still a 40-year-old woman, you know, or I'm about to be a 40-year-old woman. And just having those kind of like lines of respect very clearly, so we can have a very transparent, safe conversation, but you're still going to put some respect on my name, as it were.
Yeah, because I had friends growing up, yeah, I feel like I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I'm not sure, who would like always come to my mum for advice. They'd come to my mum as their safe space. And I just feel like, no disrespect to those friends or their mums, but I just wouldn't want that for my child. I would want my child to want to come to me. And I never ever had to look elsewhere to have a conversation about things that I was going through. Even for example, yeah. Well, I remember when I was younger and I remember coming home really upset, but I didn't think I was displaying it. Mom comes in the room and she's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Oh, nothing." And she's like, "No, what's wrong?" And I was like, "Oh, everyone's saying that I've had sex." And she was like, "They're saying what?" And I'm like, "They're saying that I've had sex." And she was like, "But have you had sex?" And I was like, "No." And she was like, "So why are you worried, Shan?" She was like, "There's going to be something else that someone is talking about next week. Leave the people that don't know who you are to believe what is not the truth. And the people that know who you are know the truth, and like, don't worry about it." And in that moment of time, I felt so much like, I felt so understood. I felt so at peace. And she was talking about her experiences of like people just chatting rubbish growing up. And it just made me feel like home was a safe space. Because if I was coming home and having to deal with that same stress at home, I would have been just as stressed out at home as I was at school. 100%. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, there's balance. There's balance to be
It's
had.
Interesting when you talk about your friends going to you, mom, for support, because one of the things that really scares me about being a parent is not having that family, not having that village, right? Like they say, I genuinely believe the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And, you know, my parents are not around. Barry's dad is not around. Barry's mom is a little bit older. Most of my friends are in the UK. I have a core set of girlfriends here who I'm grateful to have, of course. But, you know, everybody lives such like individualistic lives, and it's hard to find that community that's willing to support you in raising your child, or you know, being good parents and staying in a good marriage. Like, you know, you want your family or your marriage is like, yes, of course, it's between the two of you, but it takes a village to support you as well, and that includes parenting. And I often worry that I don't have that village that is physically present to support that.
I feel like you'll probably naturally create it. My friend, the one that I told you that's married and has a baby, so my godson's parents essentially, yeah, she is the only person within her friendship group, I believe, that has a child. So because of that, she goes to mother and baby classes, and she's met other women there. She's also downloaded an app where she goes for walks with other mums. Because ultimately, when you're in that transition of your life, there's things that someone like me can't relate to or have those sort of conversations. So I feel like when that time comes, you'll naturally just find it, whether it's at mum and mother and baby groups, or whether it's because you realise that your friends make more of an effort to come to Jamaica because you've now got a baby. Like, everyone's seen those memes, yeah, where it's like, the sister comes to the house and then she's like, "Get out of the way." She's like, "Move, bitch."
Wait.
It will be like
so
that.
So now that you have had those conversations with your mom and, like, thought more about the parenting piece, is there anything that still scares you about being a parent?
It's probably more the labour itself.
Birth, yeah. Oh, God. Let's not even talk about that.
it's the labour itself. Is it not a black woman are 4 times more likely to have complications or dying, all of that? The labour itself, nah. I've watched One Born Every Minute. I didn't even last 5 minutes on that programme. It was too much. It was too overwhelming. Yeah. It's too much to even get into. That process and procedure is too much. Even right now, I feel like I'm so proud of my growth when it comes to navigating my anxiety. But even that, I'm thinking, like, what if I have a baby and then my mental health triggers my anxiety and I've got to start all over again? What if I then have postpartum depression? What if I then hate my body? It's a continuous. But I feel like these things are natural.
I think as I say this all the time to my girlfriends who do have babies, I feel like we don't talk about the details of birth and parenting and the difficulty. I went to have drinks with a girlfriend of mine who just had a baby, and she actually wasn't sure that she wanted to be a parent, but she just, you know, ultimately they decided and they had a kid. And I said, how are you doing? Like, the baby's not even a year yet. Like, how do you feel? And she was just like, they don't tell you that part of you dies. There's a part of you that dies. She's like, there's a part of you that's born and a great part of you, and you become, you know, there's a new addition to or a new dynamic of your personality and who you are. But she's like, at the same time, I'm mourning the person that I was because I'm not that person anymore. And so it's I think there are many things about parenting and motherhood that we don't talk about, and we should.
I feel like we need to do a part two about that, because that's something that I'd love to explore, and neither of us can talk to that subject.
Agreed, definitely we should.
Is there any fears that you have when it comes to parenting, or is there any parts of it that, let's not do fears maybe, because let's make it a bit more happier. Are there any parts of it that you're particularly excited about?
I'm looking forward to hanging out with, and I know I just said that my child is not my friend, but I'm looking forward to like hanging out with my child, because I feel like my child is going to be super cool, and it's just going to be like having a person. I always look at my friends who have babies and I'm always like, how crazy is it that you created this person? Like, this person is yours. Like, you made them. And
I said this to someone the other day, sperm, yeah, which some people swallow, not me, but sperm enters someone's womb, creates cells, and it creates bones, nails, personality, brains, all of it, and then it comes out. That's too much.
It's crazy.
That is too much.
That is not a miracle. I don't know what is. And it happens every day, multiple times a day, people give birth, right? So, yeah, I think I'm looking forward to just like that feeling of creating something and like loving something unconditionally. Like that, I think is, and being loved unconditionally, I guess, which is something that ultimately all of us want. What about you? What's your like most exciting thing about being a parent to your own kids as opposed to other people's?
I think I find a lot of beauty in like watching the steps of a baby like come out. I feel like because I've got such a big age gap between me and my siblings, I've seen it with them. But like that experience with my own child, I think could be quite like magical. Like, a baby comes out of my vagina, then a baby crawls. No, it's not even that. Then a baby can have its back up without you holding it. Then a baby can crawl. Then a baby can walk. Then it has its first words and it goes to school. Wow, all from cells? It's crazy.
Yeah, it is insane. Well, hopefully we'll both get our wishes and we will be parents sometime in the near future, and we will be great parents. I'm sure our kids will play together and be like cousins. I look forward
to it. You're gonna be the auntie that lives in Jamaica, the overseas aunt that always calls the phone,
and that you'll ultimately send them to Jamaica to spend time with during summer or during Christmas holidays.
Absolutely. And I'll come as well, but I'll be in Mo Bay, okay, in the Breathless Hotel. Yes.
Hilarious. Okay. Yeah. Well, shout out to all the amazing Black dads and moms out there. And we see you. We see that you're doing a better job. We see that you're trying to break the cycles. And we love you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Woman CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Woman across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.